Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, social expert Rick Mons joins us from the Netherlands to talk global social trends, plus Facebook's spammy video solution and Clipboard, an Evernote Pinterest hybrid might be right for you. All that and waveform necklaces and more on The Social Hour.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 63, recorded Monday, June 4th, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/social hour. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Social Hour in very gloomy, June gloomy Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. And it is also very gloomy here in Toronto, I have to say. No sunshine for us. It's been really nice the past few weeks, but we got a little rain, Sarah. But I have to say that we needed it. It's been a dry few weeks, so it's not so bad.
Yeah, I agree. I woke up this morning and was like, that can't be rain. It must just be really heavy fog, but it's definitely rain, which is weird. San Francisco doesn't get really rain in the summertime, but I'm glad we are getting it because everything was extremely dry the last few weeks. So, you know, fewer forest fires and things like that. Bring on the rain. So, Amber, you, our first guest, well, our guest for the show today is actually somebody that you had the pleasure of meeting at a conference recently. Is that right?
Yeah, I had a chance to speak at a conference on Friday morning in Toronto, and Rick came over from the Netherlands, and he was also talking about social. The event was called Social by Design, and it was really interesting because I've seen a lot of social media speakers, and very often I think a lot of our slides overlap. We talk about the same type of content and sites and services, but of course with Rick coming from the Netherlands, we really had kind of a different twist on what was happening and more of an interesting angle, I think, on the global front. So excited to have him on the show to talk about what he's seeing in Europe and other things that he thinks are happening that are interesting on the social front as far as trends.
So without further ado, let's welcome Rick Mons to the show, coming all the way from the Netherlands. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Sarah. Hi, Amber.
Hi there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So let's talk a little bit, Rick, about what you do for a living. You're a social media expert. You're the social media lead, in fact, at Capgemini. Tell us a little bit about what you do day to day.
Well, day to day is basically helping Capgemini and our customers to be successful with social media in a B2B, B2C, and a B2E context. So, and part of it is doing presentations and meeting great people such as Amber.
Very nice. One thing that I really loved about your presentation is it was really themed around the idea of that cat and mouse game and talking about how consumers could really understand how social works. But sometimes some of the businesses out there, like retailers, don't really get the world that we live in. So could you talk a little bit more about that premise?
Yes, I think most organizations and most retailers in particular do forget that, yes, it's a cat and mouse game and consumers are not the mice. So basically, consumers dictate what will happen in the end. And if you see that most retailers spend like 95% of the budgets to get customers in store, well, you could do it relatively easy by just offering free Wi-Fi in your store. And just applying such simple design principles, such as connectivity or encouraging participation, is something that more organizations should do instead of just adding a like button to your website and just think that is social.
I like Amber had before we had booked you on the show, she had shared your presentation with me on SlideShare, which is a way for folks to be social actually with presentations that they've used in the past. And it was really interesting. John, I think you've got the link back there as well. We don't have to go through all 46 slides, but it is interesting your approach to social media. You have, what is it like, there are the five main approaches that people approach social media as. I'm not saying that very eloquently.
Yes. I see if you apply social instead of something on top at the end, but as a design principle from the start, you can use six different design elements to basically build social experience. And those six design elements are connectivity, participation on scale, data, identity, trust, and sharing.
Now, one of the things that you mentioned when you were at the conference on Friday, which I thought was really interesting, you showed this great slide of a store, I believe that it was in Brazil, where they actually had the number of likes show up on different products in store. I haven't seen anything like this in our part of the world. So explain that as a trend. And do you think that is kind of the future of the social shopping experience?
Yes, I do think it's the future of social shopping experience. The slide I showed was from the CNA in Brazil, which shows the number of likes for a certain item on the hanger. So it provides you a bit of social proof. On the downside, if 1,000 people just like, for example, a particular jacket, will you still buy the jacket? So there will be a certain tipping point. And I think most hipsters will just go for the clothing that has just one or zero likes.
That is very, very likely, of course. Now, in the Netherlands, are there trends that are happening there and things in the social space that we haven't really seen over here? Is there such an emphasis on Facebook, say, for example, that we have here in our part of the world?
Yeah, what we see in the Netherlands is that there's a transition from the local network, which used to be the most prominent one 2 years ago, called Hives, towards Facebook. And you see now the local network is in decline and Facebook is booming. And I can say Facebook is booming since my mom just joined 2 months ago, which shows that it's a certain level of maturity. And what I think is the most interesting part, not specifically for the Netherlands, but for Europe in general, is those really small niche services that pop up. That's just do one thing or two things really well, and that's just it.
You know, that's something that I noticed when I was clicking through your presentation again on SlideShare, Rick, was there were examples that you were pulling from, and they were services that I had not heard of before. So, you know, in one way, I agree with you that niche networks that do one thing really well can be great. Then again, if it never really gets widespread adoption, and we're talking about services being successful, you know, when they have users in the millions or tens of millions or more, how does that factor into it? Does it just depend on regionally the way that people use social media differently?
Yeah, I think it factors in, but also one of the examples I showed during my presentation is Ofoto, which is just a really small and simple app, which allows you to make a picture of something and ask a question to your friends on Facebook or Twitter and just let them vote with yes or no. So should I eat this or should I do bungee jumping? And let your friends vote for it. And it's basically built on top of Facebook and Twitter and basically existing social networks.
Now I know you just posted a link to an article that is about a social superstar quitting LinkedIn. And I wonder, you know, we talk about all this social stuff. Clearly on the show, we're very excited about everything happening in social. But there are people out there who say that this is really a bubble. You know, it's going to kind of go away. There are so many social media experts and there's got to be the next big thing. What do you see as far as the future of social? Is this around to stay? Are we in the early days or have we already passed its prime?
It really depends with who you're talking. For me, it's like going on forever. And if you talk with other people, it's just getting started. I think social in the end will be way more pervasive. You won't notice it that it's there. It's just part of the whole experience. And especially for retailers and in the customer experience.
And do you have a favorite social network right now that you love?
Let try me to pronounce it right, since Amber was thinking I was talking about Pot during the presentation. Dutch guy. Pot, the really small network. I love it.
It is true, Sarah. I have to tell you guys that Rick did say path, and I thought he was saying pot, and I just assumed. But nonetheless, I was wrong. He was saying path, so also quite popular in different parts of the world.
You know, there was actually somebody who had replied to me on Twitter over the weekend. Well, it wasn't really a reply to anything. It was just an at mention and said, "Path is so slow. I mean, you seem to be one of the only people I've noticed recently even using it still as path over." And I went, "What? What are you talking about? I mean, I constantly am trying to figure out who I have to drop from my 150 friends list because somebody else wants to share with me on path." And I feel like of those 150 people, it's always really hard to drop somebody because I only want to drop somebody because they don't seem to be using Path very regularly. Certainly not because they're not my friend. But that's like, hey, if you have to get rid of somebody, you might as well get rid of somebody who isn't really using the network anyway. So in my experience, I was like, what is this guy talking about? Path is great. Rick, do you hear kind of the same thing from your social group that some people use it, some people don't? What's the general consensus on Path?
A lot of people I speak have something like that. Oh, another social network. Should I really do it? And I explain it a bit on, well, how I use it and why I like it, because I see it a bit as Twitter without a digital narcissism. Mm-hmm. And it's interaction with real people. So it's more real attention, real interaction. And that's the thing I like best about it. It's completely different context, especially since it's smaller. So it's not, it's less of a numbers game.
Last question for me, because I'm sure you want to get some sleep sooner than later. But I know you put out a ton of great links. Your Twitter feed is filled with great content about what's happening in social. You also have a list of links that you dig up maybe on a daily basis, if I'm right, and really great content. If you had to recommend two or three websites where people go to really stay on the cutting edge of what's happening on the social front, what would they be?
Good question. One site I really like is Brain Pickings, since they have really interesting, high quality content. I like the Pendo Daily, since I like a bit of meta reporting. And well,
mean, meta reporting?
It's reporting on what other sites are reporting on.
So, yeah, okay, I got that. Their Pando ticker is it's actually very good at not necessarily regurgitating, but giving a synopsis of what's going on in the greater tech blogging world.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and go off and get some sleep. And thanks for taking some time in what I know was a long 24 hours.
Yeah, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, Rick. That's Rick Mons, the social media lead at Capgemini. You can learn more about what Rick is up to, not only at capgemini.com, but at don'tmindrick.com, his website, where you can find links to where Rick lives on Twitter and all over the web. It was interesting, Amber, as soon as we got into the Path discussion, a lot of folks in our chat room were like, yeah, I don't use Path either. Nobody uses Path. And it's always kind of fun for me to see all of the different attitudes that people have about any social network. But I think Path is unusual because it's like, I'm very active on Path, and you would know that because we're Path friends. But otherwise, it's very rare that anybody outside of that network would ever see anything. So they wouldn't know if I'm active or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the nice thing about Path is that it is in the public place, right? It's not some place that you go and you promote everything that you do, and it's not a marketing tool or marketing vehicle like maybe Twitter or Facebook could be. So it really is a personal network, like I imagine maybe in the early days of Facebook when Zuckerberg went on his mission to create a social network. I think Path is about friendships and relationships and really doesn't have anything to do with business. And maybe some people are uncomfortable with that. I'm not sure, but it's not a place to be narcissistic, perhaps.
or really a place to be promotional. And hey, there are Path friends of mine that I would love to know about, you know, my latest project, etc. But Path doesn't even make it easy to you know, to include a hyperlink or anything like that. So it's just, it just doesn't work for that sort of thing. But because of that, I find very rarely does anyone in my path network use it for like, here's my latest project type of a thing, which keeps things feeling very personal. Because the stuff that we are sharing is stuff that it's not really appropriate for Twitter. It's not inappropriate, but it's a little bit like, it's just like our, the day-to-day stuff that feels like it's not relevant, I guess, to my Twitter followers. A lot of stuff on Path, I just don't think that anybody would get much out of it. But my close friends certainly would, because they know me in different ways, and it's very fascinating.
Now, have they kept the limit to 150 people still? Is that...
Yes. And in fact, I, just because, again, I don't have that... My Path network has climbed from the moment that I joined, you know, and it was like, there was a 50-friend limit, and I think I was like at maybe 30. And over the last years, I've started to use it a lot more. Not only did they increase the limit to 150, but more people that I knew had signed up. And the other day, I figured out the other... I was on a plane, actually, coming back from New York, and I'm looking at Path, and a guy that I know wanted to be my friend on Path. And I'm like, oh, cool, John wants to be your friend. Accept. And it's like, it was like glitchy. It wouldn't go away, that little dialogue box of, do you want to be John's friend? And I was like, what is it? Maybe it's like really bad Wi-Fi on this Virgin America flight or something. What's the deal? And I realized, no, it's because I had exactly 150 friends. And Path was like, I can't help you. You need to get rid of somebody so that then you're down to 149 and then I can add John. So that's what I was alluding to a couple of minutes ago, is like, I went through my list and it was like, okay, well, who's the person that that shows up to me as someone who like hasn't even, you know, opened up Path in the last few months? Mm-hmm. You know, they probably don't care that I drop them because they're not using it. That seems fair.
So you did drop that person.
I did. I had to. Reluctantly, of course.
Doesn't that feel horrible? That's a horrible feeling. I've had to do that on Facebook before, because they do have a cap on the number of friends and you have to go through your list and figure out who you're going to drop. And I find it just the most gut-wrenching thing, because you just don't want to kick anyone off, or you don't want them to know. And all I imagine is running into them at an event sometime and them knowing that they were the ones who got the boot. It's not a good feeling.
It's not. But I feel like if it's the sort of thing where it's like, it's not personal, you just haven't been using Path. They can't. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's true, right? It's not like I didn't like their quality of content. It was just that they aren't around. So, hey, you can't just have the seat waiting for you if you're never going to sit in it because somebody else is tired. And they want to sit in it.
That is a new chairs. Past promo clip. That's all they need.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all they need is Sarah Lane.
That's right. Yeah. Woo. Yep, that's me. Okay, let's remind everybody that we do record The Social Hour live on Mondays, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. That's the place you go if you missed last week's show, you wonder who Amber and I have been talking to lately. We, not in every show, but in many shows, we have very, very fascinating guests. We've had a really good string of them lately. So if you have any questions about who we talked to, what that website was again, Amber's Radder Fad was really cool, but you don't remember the name of it, don't worry. twit.tv/TSH is the place to go for show notes, our videos, subscription links, all that good stuff. And of course, if you have comments, questions, feedback, etc., you can email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. All right, we have quite a bit of news this week. It's just been very, very social heavy in the news department. But before we do, we want to thank Audible for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. If you are like me, you don't always have time to read books, but you want to be the kind of person who is reading books, because books make you smart, they make your vocabulary better, you learn a lot, or you can escape into some other world, like A Song of Ice and Fire, that sort of thing. That's where Audible.com comes in, because it has a massive, and I mean massive, library, over 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of books. We're talking literature, fiction, and nonfiction too. Some people don't like fiction because they feel like, didn't really happen. I prefer nonfiction. I want real stuff. Well, they've got that too. Periodicals even. And for listeners or viewers of The Social Hour, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out the service. one of these things, the deal with audiobooks is I really think you got to try it out in order to get a sense of why audiobooks are so cool. Because when you're reading a book, it requires all of your attention. You can't do something else at the same time. You can't drive and read a book at the same time. My goodness, I do a lot of driving. Well, my speakers are just sitting there. Why not listen to a book so that I'm actually going through a book while I'm on my commute every single day, rather than not reading at all? Because quite frankly, at the end of the day, I'm tired and I don't end up reading. And if I try, I end up falling asleep with a book on my face type of thing. That's where Audible really comes in handy. Amber, you're laughing because I'm sure you know how that feels.
I sure do. I know that's not a good feeling. And I'm also looking through all of the new releases at Audible. There's lots of great new releases that have just come out in the new and notable section.
Yeah, it's true. Audible has really nice categories. So if you go to Audible, in fact, if you go to audiblepodcast.com/social hour, that is the URL to use to get that free audiobook of your choice. But when you're there, you can look through new and notable. You can see which authors have actually narrated their own books, which is kind of cool. Sometimes an author will have someone sort of famous and fancy who will be narrating their books, which is also really cool. So there's a lot of that going on. And as you use Audible more and more, I know Leo has his favorites. It's like he's got this one guy that he's like, oh, he's got the best voice. I'm so excited because I really like when he reads books because he has the right inflection, that sort of thing. So it's a lot of fun. Over 100,000 titles. You're bound to find the book that you're looking for at Audible. So again, to get that free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/social hour. Give it a try and let us know what you think. Okay, Amber, we have some news from around the web. Starting with Facebook.
Yeah. So first up is Facebook finally cracks down on auto-sharing spam with 10-second rule. Now, Sarah, I believe we've talked about this on the show before, how frustrating it is on Facebook when you go to read something and then all of a sudden it's shared with anyone, everyone. You don't realize that perhaps you used one of those apps that shared the activity to your timeline. As far as I understand it from this article, that means that you'll be able to kind of duck in for 10 seconds before it shares it. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So I have noticed this more and more in my Facebook news feed where someone will, they're always the stupidest videos too. I'll see that, you know, someone has watched, you know, girl's dress flips up in the wind on social cam, you know, and you think like, okay, well, maybe, you know, you just, honest mistake, you clicked on it and then we're like, ah, oh, this is stupid. I don't want to be, but they don't realize that that posting to all of their friends' news feeds, and it's usually the worst kind of videos because it's like something that you just say, I don't know, I have 30 seconds and someone else watched it and then you end up watching it and it's kind of, it's spammy and viral on Facebook. And Facebook saying, well, listen, we've got to crack down on a lot of this junk because not only does it artificially inflate a video service's numbers, because it makes it seem like we all watch this video. Oh my gosh, the engagement is through the roof. When really it's me launching something and going, oh no, I don't want to do this. I'm back button. Not only that, but requiring better sharing and unsharing options from within these third party apps, which I think is the bigger problem really, is that if I don't know I'm sharing with all of my friends on a service like Viddy, for example, well, that's, I should know. I should know, and I should have the choice to be able to share that or unshare that, because chances are this is not the sort of thing that you're, you know, necessarily proud to have as your main activity.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think I might have mentioned this before, but I worry a little bit about Facebook, and I do think they have to be careful, and moves like this I think will really help them in the long run. Because as of the past few weeks when I log into Facebook, Sarah, I have to tell you that sometimes I have flashbacks of MySpace. And what I mean by that is all of a sudden people have posted on my timeline, they're adding weird apps that I would probably never use, and I know I can turn that off. I don't have to allow people to do things like that. But it just seems a little cluttered with content and kind of that seediness that I noticed on MySpace towards the end when I left. Do you feel the same way at all?
Yes, I do. And I think that Facebook is doing its best not to keep that kind of reputation going. And this is one of the ways that it can crack down on this junk. You know, if I start watching something, and you know, this is actually something that I've noticed because I link my Ardio account, which of course is a social music streaming service that I pay for every month. I link my Ardio account to Facebook because I feel like, well, you know, if I'm listening to an album, then Amber can know about that. It's fine.
Sure.
No problem. I'm not embarrassed about my musical taste. However, it doesn't seem to have a minimum limit of how long I listen to a song before it shares. And sometimes I'll listen to a song and be like, eh, I don't really like this. You know, I was just giving this artist a go. I've never heard them before. And I'm going to bail out of here and listen to something else. But that does get shared. And there's no context in there to say, Sarah, listen to this for 4 seconds. Or, you know, I listened to the whole song. So you, as my friend, you know, it's like there's not enough information there. Now, of course, it's not necessarily embarrassing information, but it is stuff where I feel like, you know, anything less than 45 seconds of a song that then I get out of probably means I didn't like the song that much, and I don't really want to share stuff that I'm not liking.
So it's yeah, the
same
exactly.
idea.
Yeah, no, it feels like that Facebook as a platform really promotes oversharing, even though as people, we definitely don't necessarily appreciate that on the other end. So you end up getting this sort of cycle where I think people, you get too much from too many people, and it's great that they have all of these apps you can use, and they make it really simple to share photos and videos and all that kind of stuff. But I do think they run the risk of it just becoming this really messy environment and this messy platform because they are giving so many options to their 845 million users. And it just, it almost feels like there could be that tipping point in the next year where either they're able to withstand it and continue to thrive, or people just feel as though this is really impersonal. It's really, it's too much. It's too cluttered. It's too messy. And maybe I want something that's more like Path, right? So I sometimes worry a little bit.
I also, for some of these, and again, we're using these video apps as an example, just because they've gotten so overshare-y that Facebook is like, okay, we got to pull back on this a little bit. What I do is I just block the app. I don't have a whole lot of patience for just what I consider junk in my newsfeed. I want to know what people are up to. I'm not interested in games or who's playing what. And it's like if somebody it doesn't take much for me to say like, okay, social cam, you're blocked. I just don't really care what anyone ever watches because I've already been a little bit annoyed by these last few. And then it's like, it doesn't really matter what kind of policies Facebook puts into place because I'm just never going to see any of that stuff again. Because I was already annoyed to the point where I said, just block. And that's not good either because I might be missing out on great content. But it's like, there's that knee-jerk reaction of making sure that certain things just go completely dark. And that's not what Facebook wants either.
Yeah, definitely. And so let me ask you this and the chat room and anyone listening in as well, because I think with Facebook, what I find too, which I appreciate in the Twitter world and I appreciate it even in Google+, is that I like the conversation elements to those networks. And what I'm finding with Facebook, it's becoming less and less of a conversation. I don't know if it's the new timeline layout or what it might be, but I can go to Google+, I can post something that I think is kind of smart, interesting, may generate a conversation, and I have great feedback there. And same thing on Twitter, I'm able to find really interesting stuff. Whereas I think Facebook, it doesn't feel like that sometimes. And I don't know if there's an answer to that, or maybe that's okay.
I feel like Facebook is no less. I feel like if I want to start a conversation, Google+ does seem to be a great place to do it. When I was researching a home theater system recently, for example, I wrote everything out. Here's what I'm thinking of buying. Here are a bunch of links. And Google+ felt like the natural place to share that. And I got a great conversation out of it. Could have done the same thing on Facebook, but I feel like I might have less in common overall with my network on Facebook, partly because a lot of my Facebook friends are just childhood friends and we didn't all grow up caring about home theater audio. definitely. I've had more of a tech interest than many of my friends growing up, but that's fine. But I do find that Google+ has a pretty still a good amount of comment spam or just people saying hi, where it's like, well, I don't really know what the point of that comment was, which I get on Facebook as well. Twitter's a little bit better overall, or maybe it's just easier to ignore at replies that
I
don't make sense because
it.
It's not really there in a nice threaded
not in
comment.
Your face, right?
Yeah.
Speaking of in your face, face.com is being acquired by Facebook, say sources. And it looks like the price will be $100 million based on this TechCrunch article. I'm not as familiar with face.com. Sarah, do you know a little bit about it?
It's an Israeli company. And the idea is that if there's a photo, it's, you know, the technology is, it will be able to grab data and be able to identify people. So this is the sort of thing that, of course, is great for Facebook, right? And this would only apply to public photos. So obviously nothing that's private, because then we've, you know, you've got privacy issues about identifying people. But the idea that Facebook wants to beef up its technology so that if there is a photo with, I don't know, five people in it, they are more easily identifiable, because the more that people are tagged in photos, the more that Facebook has data on who's friends with who and who was where, and we can all be targeted to more easily. It sounds like be a great deal for Face.com. It does sound like, according to the article, and I don't think there have been any updates to the story since then, that it's a little bit murky as to whether they're outright acquiring the company, whether they're going to just have like a large investment stake in the company going forward. But it is interesting, especially since there's some news today that Facebook's trying to figure out how to give children under 13 Facebook accounts while still appeasing the parents and having different privacy restrictions for the youngsters, but also giving young people a reason to sign on to Facebook and, of course, growing their network quite a bit. This is the sort of thing that parents go, oh, my gosh, you're going to be able to, you know, read people's faces. That's just one more reason that my 11-year-old should never be on Facebook and not be sharing photos. But it's obviously more complicated than that.
Interesting. And going back to our conversation about Google Plus, this is also kind of interesting with Google Plus launching or Google launching Google Plus Local today. And as I understand it, it's also available to people who are simply just Google users. But it will allow people to find restaurant recommendations around them at the time. So if you're traveling to a city and you want to find out where you should eat nearby, this it will be a new way that you will be able to do that.
Yeah, that's right. So this is Google Plus Local. Let's see, if I just go ahead and launch, I'm in my straight up Google search right now, and I search for Mission Beach Cafe. It's one of my favorite breakfast spots in San Francisco. This is my new Google Plus search result. So over here on the right-hand side, if you were to search for this before, you might get some Google reviews. You might see, you know, a Yelp page. I still see this over on the left-hand side. But over here on the right-hand side is some aggregated Google data, which is the map of where the cafe is in the city. Here's some, looks like pictures. Then we have Zagat ratings, which is new. This is a company that Google had acquired some time back, except that they weren't actually using Zagat ratings. They were using, I guess you just say, sort of an aggregate of a variety of other services like Yelp reviews or Urban Spoon reviews or Chowhound reviews type of a thing, which was a little bit unclear because you weren't exactly sure what that those four stars meant, you know, over these variety of services. Zagat is, for anybody who's familiar with their little books, they have a really great iPad app as well, and they've been online for some time. They break it down, food, decor, service, price range, all of that stuff. So you get, it's still a review service, but it's just a different kind of review service. So instead of like worst food in the world, but best waiter, 4 out of 5 stars, that might not be 4 out of 5 stars for me. It would be nice to know that the food is really bad, the service is really good, and I only care about food, so I'm not going to go. That type of a thing. If you go ahead then and click on the 314 Google reviews that Mission Beach Cafe has, it'll then open up kind of the, slowly, of course, because I'm using my stupid MacBook Air that is the slowest computer in the world. This is now the Mission Beach Cafe kind of main page on Google Plus Local. And it's actually really nice. We've got nice high-res photos of what the restaurant looks like. Ooh, okay. Looks, I never see it empty because it's so popular. Then you have reviews from folks who have been there. So this is very Yelp-like. I mean, it's exactly how it feels. Of course, it just looks more Google Plus-like. Now, if there were any of my friends who had reviewed it, I would see those results as well. It doesn't look like anybody that I know has. But this is definitely better than what the Google, I think it was like, what did they call them? Google product pages or Google Google vendor, Google pages, I think it's what they were called. This is clearly more social. You can see on the left-hand rail, if you're in Google Plus itself, this is something that you can get just by google.com, but you have this little area here. It says new. That's Google Plus local, and it has a little pin drop there. So it gives you a sense that they're trying to bake this stuff into the Google Plus experience much more than they have so in the past, and it looks pretty nice.
Very cool. Yeah, I think that's really useful. Now, I don't know. I've been having some troubles with the Google Plus app on my Android phone. And I will tell you that I have probably reinstalled the app maybe 3 or 4 times since I switched over to Android a few months ago. And I still have major issues with the app. It's always open, always running. I don't know what the answer to that is. I was just looking at my phone earlier today and it crashes. It seems really buggy. And I don't know if it's just me, but maybe on the iPhone experience is that much better, which is ironic.
They did launch a new Google Plus app, which I think we talked about a couple of weeks
ago. Yes, we did, yeah.
Yeah, and it's really nice looking. It's like Google Plus cannot seem to come up with anything that just makes it compelling for me to go there a few times a day. I think I'm visiting regularly, but it's not like my number one network where I'm like on it all the time. The way I still am with Twitter or even Path, even though it's a lot more private. Even a really nice looking app hasn't really done that for me. I haven't heard from other Android folks that Google Plus is kind of slow and laggy. I wonder if that's a known issue or what.
I don't know. It's just not the best experience. I mean, I tend to mostly go on Google Plus when I'm sitting at my computer. And like you, I don't find I check in there as much as I should. But when I do, I really appreciate all of the great content that's there in the conversation. But it hasn't become part of my regular routine. I think maybe that's going to take some time to switch over. But if I had a mobile app that I thought was a little bit more enticing, maybe it would be incorporated through in my day a little bit better. But no such luck yet, Sarah.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to our social tip of the week. Conference calls. Yay.
Yes. You know what? I don't know about you, but I do a lot of conference calls and it drives me crazy because they have these really long conference numbers and you're dialing in, you forget the number. When you get on the phone, you have these really awkward pauses. You don't know who's on the call. You don't know who you're talking to. You don't know who's speaking, whatever it might be. So this is really neat. I was excited to discover it. It's called uberconference.com. And the idea is to take the pain out of conference calls by adding this visual element. So with this software, we're showing a quick video now, what you'll be able to do is you'll dial in like you would with a conference call, but instead of just sitting there on the phone and not seeing who's talking, you'll actually have a little icon. You'll be able to see who's talking, who's on the phone, some information about them. So it's adding this layer to the conference call, I think, that makes it much more visual, much more interactive, and would probably enhance the experience overall for everyone. Again, getting rid of those awkward moments that you often have on some of these conference calls.
I have heard. I haven't had the pleasure of being able to use Uber Conference because I don't do a whole lot of conference calls at Twit, at least, you know, beyond these sorts of, I guess you could call them conference calls. But it seems like a competitor to Google Hangouts, Google Plus Hangouts.
Yeah, I guess it could be. I mean, the only difference being that with Google Plus Hangouts, they would either be public or you would have to be a Google Plus member, right?
Right.
So this being a better first kind of invite-only private conversations. Also, it looks like they will be coming out with an iPad, iPhone, and Android version. So you're right. I think the experience would be a little bit more like that as far as seeing people. I don't get the sense that they have video feed, though, coming back. It's really just a thumbnail of the person who is talking and some information about them. I could be wrong about this, but you have every free account starts with 5 caller maximum. You can have as many as 17 people on the calls, being able to talk to each other. And it has lots of social integration as well. It looks like it's free and they're releasing a premium version soon. But I do like this idea of just enhancing the conference call, because that's one thing I think in our business lives that really hasn't improved with technology so much if you're not using Skype or another service like that.
Yeah, I love the whole, you know, this is Sarah. Okay, so here's my thought. You know, having to remind people, who's talking? Is that Amber? No, that's the other one. That sort of thing. So yes, So that's Uber Conference at uberconference.com if you want to check it out. Very good little social tip. If you have to, if you have to sit through a lot of conference calls, you want them to be as pain-free as possible. We all, I think, can agree on that. Spotlight exactly. This week is a service called Clipboard, with a C, as in Charlie. I say that just because it sounds like Flipboard, I think. Clipboard is, it's kind of neat. I read an article, can't exactly remember what tech blog it was on, but they said, oh, it's like Pinterest, but it acts like Evernote. So I went, okay, I like both of those. I like the way that sounds. What's the deal? And that's actually what Clipboard feels like. The idea is that you are clipping things that you find online as you're going about your business. So you then can create an account where you have a lot of tiled views of things that you have saved. But there isn't Evernote quality to it, because it's not so much that the way that Pinterest is like, it's almost like an art form where I am sharing stuff that's visual, and I can provide context, but it's not even really necessary. And then Evernote is a lot of like, you're clipping things because you want to remember what you're doing and stuff that you've seen, and you want it to be all in one place. Clipboard does seem like a hybrid between the two, where you have a visual account of things that you've saved, but it's not just visual for visual's sake. I actually have a Clipboard account up on my computer right now, and it took me a little while to kind of get it. This is actually a board that I've made. I called it Social. And within the board, I have an article about a Foursquare app getting a facelift in a few days. What's kind of neat about it is that this article did come from Mashable, and it was able to pull that information when I clipped the article. And then on the left-hand side, it also has a site that the site Mashable that this article came from. So I didn't have to remember that maybe I like a lot of stories on Mashable. That would just be something that would accumulate over time. If I were to clip something from scratch, this is actually Rick Mon's SlideShare presentation that we were talking to him about. I've already installed the bookmarklet for Chrome up in the right-hand corner. So if I go ahead and just say, okay, I want to clip this, I want to remember, what Clipboard will then do is try to guess, as you can see, the way that the little window is changing. It's trying to say, okay, what are you trying to clip on this page? You want to clip the whole page? You want to clip this? This is actually what I want to clip. So I'll go ahead and click there. And at that point, I've got this dialog box that's saying, okay, well, here's the information that I pulled from the page. This is what it's called. I could decide to call it something else. I could just say, you know, Rick Mons. Then I can go ahead and add my little social tag, and I can go ahead and say, I want to publish this. It's ready for consumption. I could choose to share to Facebook or Twitter, but for our purposes right now, I won't. And then I go ahead and save, and that gets saved to my Clipboard area. If I go back I'll go ahead and refresh this page to my account at Clipboard, I should now see two different clips inside my social board, and I do. We've got my Foursquare story that started off there, and then the newest from slideshare.net. So you can see that it's like, even though there's only a couple little squares right here, over time, this would end up kind of looking Pinteresty. And then again, SlideShare has been added to my sites area, which I think if you start using this really heavily, that can be really interesting data just for you, where I say, my gosh, I really share stuff from SlideShare all the time.
Yeah, that's really neat. I use Evernote a lot, and I use it a lot if I'm researching for writing an article or doing a presentation, whatever it might be. And one thing I find with maybe it's just the way that I'm putting in the article links is I literally have these pages, and there's lists of just links, right? So there's nothing visual about it, but something like this I think could be really useful, because as you get more and more links in there, it's nice to have that point of reference that is visual. And I know on Evernote you can take screenshots and all that kind of stuff. I tend to not do that, so I just literally copy and paste a link in, and it's not that organized. But I could see this being just a different way to manage it, especially if you're a really visual thinker.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know that if you were a heavy Evernote user, because I feel like when people get the hang of Evernote, is very much a one-stop shop where it can do so many things, and clearly that's the kind of service that it wants to be. you might not have a use for clipboard, but I also have talked to people before who say Evernote is a little, it's like, it's not necessarily intuitive. They haven't figured out a way to incorporate it into their daily routine. And I think that there's an issue across the board, haha, no pun intended, that we all are looking at so much stuff and it's like, okay, well, where are we saving everything? What's the way that best works for me? Is it Instapaper? Is it Evernote? Is it Pinterest? Is it Delicious? Is it Clipboard? And I don't think there's a right or wrong. It just, it's what works best for you. And obviously, as long as the service doesn't go away, then who cares which one you use? As long as you're saving your data.
That is a really good point, because I think one of the reasons that I end up sticking with Evernote is that trust factor. I know they've been around for a really long time. They have a great reputation. They're available across all platforms, so it makes it really easy to use it, because I sometimes switch between different operating systems on my phone. And it's a really simple option to be able to rely on that and not worry about 6 months down the road it just disappearing, right?
Yes, which does happen. So that is something to take into consideration. It's like, yeah, Evernote just got a big round of funding. They're on the up and up. They're definitely not going anywhere for a while. So we got an email from Mike Tabbert. Thank you for emailing us, Mike. And he sent us a link. He said, I thought that this was a pretty awesome use of the internet. Not sure it fits into the show, but it shows that the internet is a very powerful tool. Okay. Well, it's actually a story from daily.com about the Reddit community being awesome. We talk about Reddit folks here and there, and I think one of the things that Reddit is so good for is rallying the troops, you know, behind something. It's I guess there's a Reddit effect. There's always an effect anytime a site is really popular. But this particular story is really adorable. Somebody who is a Reddit user wrote in the assistance group a personal post. So it wasn't necessarily something, you know, for the masses, but that this person's grandmother had been diagnosed with terminal cancer. She was very old, 92, and said, hey, I sent her a Mother's Day card, and then I got a voicemail from her almost in tears thanking me for it because she hardly gets cards anymore. So this person said, you know, if you would consider sending my grandma a birthday card, I mean, it wouldn't be that hard, and she's just, you know, she's an old lady, and she's sick, and maybe she'll get a kick out of it. And she received like 70 different cards from complete strangers wishing her happy birthday and knocked her socks off all over the world. Taiwan, Australia, Ireland. I mean, that's great.
I hope they send them to a P.O. box, Sarah. Sorry, this is my paranoia coming in again with revealing your address, your physical location on the internet. But nonetheless, it's a great cause. And I've actually been hearing a lot of good things come out of the Reddit community as far as them rallying around certain individuals or causes. And I did see this story as well. So it's a nice one. I mean, I don't think we just don't get as much mail anymore, right? So it becomes a special thing.
And I think that as much as I don't like mail or checking my mailbox, it's not because mail sucks. It's because I never actually get anything like a birthday card. You know, it's all catalogs for whoever lived in my apartment before me or bills or, you know, there's nothing fun about it. But that is, you know, it's that nice feeling. And especially if you're of the generation that the Redditor's grandmother is. That's still, I mean, if you're 92 years old, getting something in the mail is the nicest kind of birthday card to get. You are right, Amber. Hopefully they were sent to a safe place and then delivered to grandma.
Thank you.
But thank you, Mike, for sending us a little feel good social story.
That's a really nice story. You know, it's funny because we talk about all of the benefits of the internet and technology, and there are many, but I think about my grandmother who passed away a few years ago, and I have this photo album of letters that she wrote me, letters and cards. We used to write back and forth for, I'd say, a good 10 or 15 years. Once I got into my teens, we would always write letters, send postcards, birthday cards, everything. And I literally have this amazing documentation of all of our correspondence. And I think with technology, we really haven't been able to replace that in a sentimental way, right? I can't see doing that with emails my parents have written me, for example. I don't know. Maybe we will, but I guess that's a disadvantage sometimes of technology, is losing out on that actual physical experience.
Yeah, absolutely. This next infographic comes from Mark Wansell in Royal Oak, Michigan. He says, Wow. In case you haven't seen this, it's a picture from Buddy Media, just acquired by Salesforce, by the way, showing all of the social marketing avenues, and the article notes that Pinterest isn't even on it. Keep up the good work. Holy crud. Okay, so we're looking at the most complicated infographic in the world that's supposed to kind of break down what all the social tools do. So you got URL shorteners like Bitly or Tiny URL, for example. You've got content creation like Flipboard, SkyGrid, Storify, Memolane, Sumify, a lot of the stuff Amber and I have talked about. But wow, when you look at it in this sort of a way, it makes you tired.
It's very overwhelming, to be honest with you. I look at this and my first reaction is that we have seen great infographics in the past. You know, people are really creative in terms of how they design infographics. I wouldn't put this in the category of a great infographic design. I'm guessing there might be a better way to display all of these different services, but it is overwhelming when you look at, you know, social, like you said, social intelligence, social scoring, all of the different tools in here. It's just, it's a lot. It's a lot to swallow, Sarah.
Especially since how is Pinterest not in this infographic? I mean, you've got social sites that I just heard about last week that are in there in the social shopping area, and there's no Pinterest? How can you not have Pinterest? Pinterest is like the big success story of 2012 so far. Oh, well.
Yeah, that's a little bizarre. I don't know. I can't figure that one out. All I know is we have a lot of work to do, Sarah, if we have to cover all of these.
It's true. It's actually, well, it's good research, right? By the way, yeah. If you're like, where's that infographic? We'll have those all in our show notes with everything else that we talk about. And you can stare at it. You can print it out, put it on your wall, frame it, make sure that you know everything in social. I don't know. It's good stuff, though, from Buddy Media.
Yeah, very cool. Thanks for sharing that.
All right, Twitter Spotlight. Politwoops? I don't even know how to say this, Amber.
Politwoops? I don't know how to say it. Politwoops. This is kind of a neat site. So basically, obviously we have, or you guys in the U.S. have a big election coming up. And what Politwoops is deleted tweets from politicians. So politicians on Twitter who have written tweets and then deleted them, they are not gone forever. And in fact, there is no way for them to hide their tweets where they've made mistakes or shared things they shouldn't have shared, because these are the tweets that have been deleted and then brought back to life on Politwoops.
Love this. For whatever reason, their images aren't loading on the site, but it's like, it's not that I get a lot of joy from somebody sharing something and then for whatever reason taking it down, and the fact that it might be embarrassing and it's up there for the world to see. It's not like I want anyone to be embarrassed. However, it always seems to be there are certain sectors where this sort of thing happens a lot. And politics is one of them, because I guess you get a lot of people who are maybe not so informed on how the internet works, you know, and if something's up there for 1 second or a fraction of a second, somebody will grab it. I mean, you can count on that, whether you meant it or not, or you regretted it or whatever. And politics is a very gotcha sort of a game. So
definitely.
I got a chuckle at this.
Even the article that I read about this, I mean, they were very clear in saying that oftentimes many of these tweets, these messages that were sent out, they may just have a spelling mistake in them, that all of a sudden the politician has taken it back and put out the proper version, right? But, you know, that's the majority of them. But every once in a while, you can imagine that they're going to catch someone who has done something that is not so intelligent in the social space. And I think it's a good learning for everybody to understand that this site is just for politicians, but you can imagine there is a demand for celebrities who have done the same thing to have a service like this, and it's kind of interesting to see it, and as long as you're not the victim of it, I suppose.
Right, yeah, exactly. We'll just keep laughing on the other side of all of this.
Exactly.
Politwoops. A reminder that we love hearing from you. As much of your feedback, your questions, your comments as we can add into the show, we absolutely will. And you have a few ways that you can get a hold of us. TheSocialHour@twit.tv is our email address. You can also leave us a voicemail if you're feeling brave. 2626 Social, SOCIAL. That's our Google Voice mailbox. Leave us a voicemail, 30 seconds or less, and we'll play it on the show, probably. Or you can record a video, even. Take it, you know, go audio video. Just send us the link to where the video lives somewhere. Upload it to YouTube or Vimeo or social cam or wherever you want. Just send us the link to that so we don't have to open any attachments. All right, we're almost at the end of the show, but we wouldn't end it without Amber's Rad or Fad.
Yeah, so this is a fun one, Sarah. I found this on Mashable, and it allows you to turn your voice into jewelry. So the idea being, if you're looking for a really interesting piece of jewelry, this guy, designer David Beiser, has created a necklace that's customized to the sound of your voice. So it's a waveform necklace. And it's designed based on a personal audio recording that you send to him via email. So you record something and then he turns it into this jewelry that, again, is all waveforms. The necklaces are pretty affordable, starting from $10 to $24. An interesting idea and kind of a cool gift. I liked this. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of random, but interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, it is random. It's kind of like, okay, well, for a while, you saw a lot of people with necklaces with their at Twitter handle. You still do. But, you know, a couple years ago, that was kind of new and novel. But then it was pretty clear. I mean, it's something that you can read. So this is obviously a lot more abstract. You get a lot of people saying, what is that? Rather than, what's that waveform of? Because it's random. But it doesn't have to be your name. It could be anything.
Or like it's interesting.
A line from your favorite song or something. I like the artistic expression part of it, and the fact that no two would ever look alike. Well, no two would ever be the same anyway. Maybe they'd kind of look alike, but they're like little unique snowflakes.
They're fun. Now, if you click on the link at the bottom of this post, Sarah, you'll notice that there's also an article for turning your Foursquare check-ins into jewelry. And our social media audience may like this even more. This is super, super creative. And it's a San Francisco-based startup that does this. So they make jewelry based on a pattern of your Foursquare check-ins.
Oh, it looks awesome.
It looks awesome. I think visually this is more appealing in some ways.
Yeah, because when you say, it's a necklace of your Foursquare check-ins, I'm just like, I can't imagine what that would look like. But I love that on a grid of, you know, the city neighborhood that you hang out in the most. It looks really neat. It's very spiderwebby.
Yeah, I like that. Well, I don't use Foursquare a lot, but it makes me want to.
Yeah, I know. You don't. See, you could get the best jewelry, Amber.
I want to just do it. I want to steal someone else's account and do it.
You could use mine. It's fine.
All right.
I don't mind. Yeah, you'll have your little San Francisco Mission Beach Cafe waveform necklace.
That's not stalkerish at all if I wear Sarah Lane's Foursquare check-ins around my neck.
No.
That won't be weird.
That'd be fine. Not weird at all. I love these. Yeah. These are great. I mean, I guess I just like unique jewelry also. So it's a nice gift idea. Or imagine if you... You know, let's say your 92-year-old grandma, you give her a waveform necklace that's like, you know, you say something nice to her. And it's like, that's not something that you can read. I mean, you can't read a waveform. But if you were to tell her what it meant, I don't know. It seems very, like it could be very personal. And and it makes somebody really happy.
Yeah, and it looks like they also do other things as far as this jewelry company. I believe it's Meshu, maybe, is the website or the name of the startup. And they also allow you to do pre-made jewelry that includes things like San Francisco neighborhoods. So they create a design out of San Francisco neighborhoods, among other places. So
cool.
I really have huge respect for people who are so creative like this. I am not. It's a fun idea, especially if you're a hardcore Foursquare user.
Yes. Which I
am. There are many.
One of us is anyway. All right. That is it. Our hour is up for this episode of The Social Hour. Remember, we are live on Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific for a limited time, actually. Amber, it's probably a good time to start reminding people that our live time slot is about to change. Well, not tomorrow, but in mid-July, we are going to move from Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern to Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern. That's 1 p.m. Pacific. For a variety of reasons, we're adding a bunch of shows to the Twit Network, so it was a time for Leo and the gang to kind of look at our schedule and say, okay, we've got to add some more shows, but we don't necessarily want the new shows to just go in the time slots that are available. Let's take this opportunity to look at our whole schedule and figure out where shows would actually maybe be better suited. Now, Mondays, as much as I love hanging out with Amber on Mondays, Mondays can be kind of tough for social news because you have a bit of a lull over the weekend and a lot of stuff ends up coming out today and tomorrow. And we find that we can talk about them on the next show, but sometimes they don't feel extremely fresh, and we're hoping that Friday might be a better fit for the show.
Yeah, I think it's a really great time as far as just being a more relaxing, fun way to get guests too, because I find often on Mondays people are just so booked and so busy after the weekend. Yeah. But end of day Friday, or you know, just after lunch if you're on the West Coast, then that I think it's a nice, more appealing time slot than you know, the early hours of Monday.
Agreed. So that, again, is going to be happening. It'll be the week after I come back from vacation, so the week after 4th of July, which is the week of July 10th, we'll be sure to update you, but just wanted to make sure that you were aware that our time slot is changing soon. But of course, if you can't watch us live, don't worry. You don't have to miss anything, because everything lives at twit.tv/TSH. That is the Social Hour's website, where all of our past episodes live, show notes, all the good stuff. And of course, you can find our show in iTunes. If you want to subscribe and not worry about ever missing a show, just have it delivered to your podcatcher. Until next time, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. Thanks for watching. We'll talk to you soon.
See you guys next week.